This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Later in the hour, a conversation with Nobel Prize-winning chemist Carolyn Bertozzi. But first, lots of volcano news. Hawaii's Mauna Loa volcano woke up this fall and began erupting in earnest late last weekend. So far, and this can always change, residents of the Big Island city of Hilo haven't had to worry about their homes. But when one of the world's largest and most famous volcanoes goes off, you know there's going to be interesting stuff going on. And here with some of that very technical interesting stuff is Maggie Kurth, senior science writer for 538. She joins us from Minneapolis. Welcome back, Maggie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It has been a week for volcanoes, hasn't it?
It sure has. Mauna Loa is the largest active volcano on Earth. And this is the first time that it has erupted in almost 40 years. So there's a lot of kind of fascinating stuff going on with this. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting were the warnings that were going out about something called the Hair of Pelée, which is—
Wait, what? The what?
The Hair of Pelée. Don't touch the Hair of Pelée. It's something that like has been warnings that have been going out to people in Hawaii. Hair of Pelée, which is named after Hawaii's volcano goddess, is this stuff that looks like human hair, or it looks like maybe like a bunch of straw. And you find it like wrapped around telephone poles or gutters or like the corners of houses. It's almost like a tumbleweed, but it's actually threads of glass, and it can cut you if you try to pick it up.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So like it's formed when bubbles on the surface of a lava flow burst open and they stretch the bits of lava into these long filaments that kind of cool into glass threads. It's almost sort of like if you imagine a cotton candy machine and how that sort of melts the sugar and stretches it out. It's kind of similar to that. And it's so light that it just floats away on the breeze and then collects in these piles on whatever objects it runs into.
You said that people were seeing the Hair of Pelée as sort of a warning sign. Is that a warning sign for scientists also who study volcanoes?
Well, the Hair of Pelée is something that the scientists are warning people about. But there is a way where the volcano is affecting science right now also, because it has shut down one of the world's most important climate monitoring stations.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. It took out the power lines, basically. Like the lava took out the power lines to this place that has been monitoring CO2 levels since the 1950s. So it's one of the places where we get our, you know, when you find out how much parts per million of CO2 is in the atmosphere on Earth, a lot of that data is coming from this monitoring station in Hawaii. And right now it cannot do its job because the power has been knocked out. But the site itself is still intact. There's actually, as of the 29th, the Washington Post was reporting that there were still scientists at the site and that they were safe. They just couldn't do their jobs.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about other volcano news. I mean, there's news about the famous magma under Yellowstone National Park.
Right. So there's twice as much magma in that Yellowstone supervolcano as previously thought. Now, for those who are unaware, or those of us who have purposely forgotten, there is a really massive volcano underneath of Yellowstone, and its previous eruptions, which were hundreds of thousands or millions of years ago, have been some of the biggest eruptions in the history of planet Earth. And this volcano is still alive down there. But scientists monitor it really closely, and the data that comes in, including this newest study, it just continues to be good news. That's because, you know, even with twice as much magma as we thought there was, it still doesn't have enough liquid down there to be a serious explosion risk.
So they're not fencing off the park or anything like that, just to let people know.
No, no. Yeah, like the study, what these results, they don't represent the volcano changing. What they represent is our skill at measurement changing. And it says that about 16 to 20% of that magma chamber is molten liquid. But as the study's authors told the New York Times, you know, the rule of thumb is that reservoirs can't really produce eruptions until they're around 35% to 50% molten.
All right, I'm going to put that off to the side on my worry list so I don't have to worry about
good news, everyone.
let's move to a completely different kind of story from Yellowstone. It's wolves who, it turns out, have parasites. Bad news, I would think.
Well, I mean, maybe not for the wolves. So this is like everybody's favorite cat parasite, the Toxoplasma gondii. And it turns out it's now available in canine form. It's famous for infecting mice and messing with their brains in ways that make them bold and careless and more likely to be eaten by cats. But there's also evidence that this same parasite can infect the brains of creatures who are not typically being eaten by house cats. That includes us. We humans who are infected with Toxoplasma gondii seem to have higher levels of testosterone and dopamine and are more likely to take risks. But gray wolves are also infected with Toxoplasma gondii. And Yellowstone gives you a really great place to study that because the researchers there have years of data where they have wolf blood samples, they have those samples connected to life histories and detailed notes about social status and behavior. And this study found that the infected wolves kind of become more cool.
The wolves become more cool once they get infected.
Yeah, like it's good for them. Like they're 11 times more likely than uninfected wolves to leave home to start a new pack and 46 times more likely to become pack leaders, which is a status that often means that they're the only wolves in the pack that are breeding.
Huh, and how do the wolves get this cat parasite in the first place?
Well, you know how dogs really like to eat poop?
Unfortunately, yes.
One of the ways that they can become infected is by eating cougar poop, or by stealing prey from cougars. So that's kind of the idea of like where that might be coming from.
You know, I'd love to go to a business seminar where they just encourage you to get a parasite to boost your leadership potential.
Yeah, I don't really know how well that works for us, but it seems to be working for the wolves. You know, the researchers think that maybe at one point in the distant past, it was less good for the wolves because there used to be this whole species of extinct American lions that maybe the wolves were prey for when they had this parasite. But, you know, they aren't really cougar prey. They're something that can kind of fight off cougars, so it doesn't really put them at risk of being eaten by cats. Hmm.
All right, let's move on to a more sobering note where we're learning more about the risks of PFAS, you know, one of those so-called forever chemicals, what the risks pose for human health, even as more and more of them seem to be in our water supply. Give us the latest here, if you will.
Yeah. So Melba Newsom at Science News has a really interesting piece out this week that's kind of looking at the big picture of this evidence that's been building up over a long period of time. This is a family of chemicals called PFAS, and they're found in everything from sunscreen and makeup to carpet and fast food packaging. And it's also the same stuff you've probably heard about before with the Teflon pans. You know, that's right. The same issue. So these things are so ubiquitous, you know, you can't really avoid them. Even if you can, they're also in your drinking water at this point. And they've been the subject of study for years, but this past summer, the National Academies released a report that set the first clinical guidelines for PFAS blood concentrations. And it identified four disorders that have sufficient evidence to link them to PFAS exposure. So that's now poor antibody response to vaccination, abnormally high cholesterol levels, decreased infant and fetal growth, and kidney cancer. And on top of that, there's a whole bunch of other illnesses and disorders where some evidence is linking them to PFAS.
This is not good news. No.
It absolutely is not. I mean, these things have been around since the 40s. They're really widely used because they're really good at repelling oil and water and reducing friction. But we know now that these things are interfering with hormones in the body, and even the newer ones that were pitched as safer alternatives probably aren't. And this whole thing really just exposes some serious problems in the way our regulatory systems approach risks from industrial chemicals. You know, it's really a try it and let's see what goes wrong kind of system. And these are still legal.
Any good news about getting rid of them? How we might do that?
Well, the EPA has set some new limits this year on how much can be in your public drinking water. And you can get your well tested, and you can also request information from your city water provider about the testing that they're doing.
All right. One last hopefully more fun, cool thing, a story for us. I'm just going to say two words because that's all I've got. Ant and milk. I mean, what?
Ant milk.
Ant milk. Well, excuse my French. What the heck's going on here?
Well, you know, it milk is the thing that defines mammals, right? We all make it. But the logic is, you know, all mammals make milk, but maybe not everything that makes milk is a mammal. Hmm. So this new study is showing that ant pupae, which are this stage of development where an ant is basically inert, they are secreting a nutrient-rich fluid that newborn larval ants depend on for survival. So milk?
Whoa. Well, is it really milk? I mean, what is it?
I mean, it is.
Do they eat, do they drink it? How do they use it?
Well, they consume it. They eat it. The baby ants use it to grow. Adult ants also drink it, though. And one way that it is different than milk, at least as mammals understand it, is that if the babies and the adult ants didn't drink the milk, I'm using air quotes here, you can't see, then the pupae that secrete it would actually be in danger because it can cause fungal growth if it builds up too much. And also they can literally drown in it.
Wow. How did we, I mean, we've been studying, not me, but we've been talking to scientists for decades who study ants. How did we not notice this before?
It's not all ants that do this, but each of the five biggest subfamilies have species that do. And it's just like, it's this very tiny detail in ant development that, you know, there's a lot of things that we don't know about insects yet, man.
Yeah. Maggie Kurth, always a pleasure to have you. Happy holidays to you.
Yeah, to you as well.
Maggie Kurth, senior science writer for 538, based in Minneapolis.